This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane. There are several ways to introduce our guest, Jason Vio. He just won a 2015 Grammy for Best Classical Instrumental Solo for his album Play. NPR called him perhaps the most precise and soulful guitarists of his generation. He teaches at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, where he co-founded the guitar department, and at the Cleveland Institute of Music. The other way is to listen to him play El Colibri, composed by Julio Sagreras from Play. That's our guest, Jason Vio, playing El Colibri, composed by Julio Sagreras from his late CD, I should say, called Play. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times. Congratulations on the Grammy, and congratulations on playing El Colibri.
Thank you, Marty.
That's quite a feat.
Thanks.
Yeah, it means the hummingbird, right?
The hummingbird, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the guitar's, I guess it's the classical guitar's flight of the bumblebee.
Right, one can hear that.
Yeah.
You, as you were listening, you were saying, you know, I don't often get to hear myself play.
Yeah, once the records are done, I mean, you spend a lot of time in the post-production process and, you know, with my producer, Alan Bice, and engineer Bruce Egri of Azika Records, they spend a lot of time, you know, of course, in the editing process. So you do about 3 full edits, and so you have to listen to those and make notes. But you're doing that so much that it's actually nice to get away from it for a while once it comes out. Yeah, and then you kind of don't listen to it for a while. So, and then in the interviews, you know, the radio interviews, it's nice to kind of to listen to it.
You like what you hear?
It sounds good, yeah. I mean, that's a very tough piece to play that well. I mean, thank God for editing, you know.
are we hearing a lot of editing there?
Well, I mean, every classical music recording, because of the standards, the very stringent standards. I mean, I think everybody knows that there's some editing involved, that what you're hearing is not, you know, like a complete performance. Or otherwise, I mean, recordings would be so easy to make. You just go in and do them and crank them out. But, you know.
Doesn't work out that way.
No.
You know, I noticed on this CD, you have a new one called Together, but this CD that got the Grammy, is it most of the music is Spanish or from South America?
Over the place, yeah.
Do you have an affinity for that kind of music, or perhaps the rhythms?
Yeah. I've always had an affinity for South American music, Brazilian, Argentinian, I mean, anything. I mean, it's really the rhythm element of it that's really attractive. I think the combination of a melody, of a good melody over a nice kind of rhythmic backdrop, sort of like jazz, you know, my background when I was a real small kid at 3 years old, listening to jazz and bossa nova and hearing that kind of thing. And so, you know, a lot of the pieces on Play are these short encore type pieces that could serve as a short piece at the end of the concert when the audience is asking for more music. And so the CD is kind of a celebration of 20 years of, you know, professional touring and playing for audiences. And a lot of them do have this kind of almost a pop music element, like Misionera by Fernando Bustamante is really a very well-known song in Argentina. And it's really, you know, very simple melody over kind of a rhythmic backdrop.
Well, I'd love to have you play Misionera.
Sure. That was a nice segue.
It was a perfect segue, actually.
Thank you.
Wow. That was great. I'm speechless. Jason Vio playing a song called Misionera, composed by the Argentine composer Fernando Bustamante. I'm looking at your album here. This is from Play. And you also give a bit of a shout-out to composer Jorge Morel.
Yes, because Jorge is the arranger of that. So that's a song, basically, in Argentina. And Jorge is a great classical guitarist from Argentina who's lived in New York since the early 60s. And I was really fortunate to take a couple lessons from him when I was a teenager, growing up in Buffalo and then again in Cleveland, when I moved to Cleveland to go to the Cleveland Institute of Music to study. And those interactions with him as a teacher were really important for me. And he gave me a lot of freedom in the sense to say, like, oh, you know, these are just kind of – this is the arrangement that's on the score, but you could do this, you could do this. And, yeah. So
have fun with it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What you have your guitar, and I'm just curious about what kind of guitar you play.
Yeah.
You know, so that people.
Yeah, well, the
learn about that.
Yeah, the classical guitar is similar. There are some similarities to what we see a lot on television, an acoustic guitar. Sometimes when, you know, a singer-songwriter, if you see like that kid on The Voice, you know, that's a steel string guitar. But Sting, you know, we've seen other performers like Sting and Eric Clapton, Tears in Heaven. He's playing actually a classical guitar, and that's a Spanish origin guitar with nylon strings on it. So that's basically, you know, the simple answer is it's that. The one I'm playing, of course, is a very very good one, made by a German luthier in Frankfurt.
Quite an understatement there, I'm sure.
So his name is Gernot Wagner, and it's a really wonderful instrument.
Yeah. Can I see your hands?
Sure.
Do you have long fingernails? Oh, you just on your thumb?
Just on the thumb, because my thumb is actually quite a lot shorter, actually, than my fingers. So I try to craft a longer thumbnail than we use four of the five fingers on the right hand as plectrums because right. You know as you can hear in Misionera we're playing that's a three part texture so we're playing three parts at the same time. The thumb can play a bass line
right
and then my index and middle fingers you know kind of play a little bit of a sort of a rhythmic glue in the middle. And then my ring finger plays the melody. Like this.
Yeah.
So we're doing we're playing a lot more notes and a lot more texture than the typical guitarist. So it requires a lot
Indeed.
Of training and when you're little, you know,
another
a kid.
Understatement, if I can put it that way. I saw a piece you did for NPR where you talked, someone said that you used a carved out ping pong ball
yeah,
for your, is that what I'm looking at on
that's
your
That's what thumb? You're seeing right there. It's it's really just for professional reasons just because I'm performing so much different music all the time. Like this week I'm not really playing any very much solo stuff. I'm playing in Philadelphia this week, rehearsing a lot of new music, actually, Arabic music with the Al Bustan Takht Ensemble for World Cafe Live this Saturday. And so, actually, I'm in a sort of a period right now where I'm just doing a lot of chamber music. And I have, like, radio and APR with Yolanda Kananassis and a concert there. And then Lincoln Center Chamber playing Paganini and Kernis at Alice Tully Hall in a week from now. So it's a really big chamber music month for me.
You're a busy guy. But do you like the ping pong? It's stronger than an actual nail, the ping
well,
pong
it's
ball?
Well, it's not stronger. It's just that my thumbnail actually just through all the practicing and performing gets worn down too quickly in order to regenerate, you know, to grow back. And so the ping pong ball early on in my career became a really good solution, a sort of a professional solution that did, you know, did the job.
Was that your idea?
It was something actually introduced to me by my first teacher, Jeremy Sparks, when I was 12, 13 years old, when you're first playing recitals and your nails are breaking constantly. I mean, I used to use ping pong balls on any of the nails if one would break.
Really?
That's the one thing with classical guitar, you know, kids that study it, you know, they often, you know, find when they're younger, it's very difficult for them to keep their nails unless they're just blessed with like great,
really
thick
strong
nails. So yeah, it's very much like the way I'd always describe it. It's like an oboist and their reeds, you know, like very meticulous. You have to really be careful with them. Open doors with your left hand and all this kind of stuff. You learn
to protect the nails.
To protect them, yeah.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Our guest is Jason Viau, and he won a 2015 Grammy for Best Classical Instrumental Solo. This is for his album Play. He has a new album, and it's called Together, and we will be playing some selections from that as well. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation and some more music as well. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program. Also, tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with classical guitarist Jason Viau. He's in studio for an hour of music and conversation. He has brought his guitar as well. And I do want to play another piece from his album called Play that got the Grammy. This is Cavatina by film composer Stanley Myers. This piece was featured in the 1979 film The Deer Hunter. And again, this is from Viau's 2014 album called Play. Our guest Jason Viau playing Cavatina from his 2014 album that got a Grammy called Play. And I remember seeing that movie, The Deer Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
It just tore me apart.
Amazing movie.
But there's something about that music.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very poignant. And yet, in kind of a pop style, in a way, in terms of like the chords and the harmony and everything underneath it, but very smartly. A written piece. And, you know, for me, that was a duo that I used to play just for fun with my teacher.
Oh, really?
As a kid. And, you know, a lot, some kids don't, you know, at that age, you know, I was 12, 13, you know, you always want to play fast. But that was one of those things where it was just, I used to love playing that. You know, always love that melody.
You wrote in the liner notes, the G major to C major chord progression moves in the melody still gets me every time.
Yeah, it's that where he's that? This way. And then right here. That's great. That's genius. Really great.
So when did you pick up your first guitar? How old were you?
Well, my mother brought one home one day when I was five, and I didn't really study anything on it. I just goofed around on it and did take some music reading lessons, almost kind of like an early music theory course, summer course, with jazz guitarist Joel Perry, who performs regularly in New York. And he was living in Buffalo at the time. And so I learned how to read, write, and sing solfege using the guitar as kind of like – instead of the piano as the instrument. But I didn't really learn like pieces at that time. And then when the Buffalo Guitar Quartet came to my school for an outreach concert, my mother happened to be working there as a secretary for the library, which was very fortunate because I would have – enjoyed that concert and then went to my classes and, you know, and not really thought of, oh, you know, I really want to study with these guys. But, you know,
she knew
she was, yeah, she, cause I had the guitar around and I was playing things by ear and, you know, and, so she said, I think he's got a really great ear. He's, you know, he loves music, sings harmony parts to the Beatles records and, you know,
and there was a lot of Beatles music growing up, right?
Yeah. I loved them. So that's how I started. So when I actually started practicing and taking lessons, it was classical guitar and music and etudes and exercises right from the very beginning with Jeremy Sparks.
So what kind of, besides the Beatles, what kind of music did you grow up listening to?
The record collection was really on my mom's records were all, you know, rock and roll and soul, like soul, R&B, Stax, you know, Motown, all the good stuff, right? And my dad had only modern jazz records. He was not a fan of popular music, you know. So it was
A lot of classical music then.
But they didn't really have many. I think they had a Gershwin. They had Bernstein and New York Phil doing like Gershwin, like American in Paris.
Right.
Like that was about it, you know. But then once I started learning the classical repertoire, the Spanish pieces, Bach, then my father especially really just completely just fell head over heels for classical music. And I think after that, he almost listened exclusively to that. It's interesting.
Well, I'd love to have you play another piece. Speaking of pop, Oh, What a Wonderful World.
Yeah, this is kind of a new arrangement of mine. And since I'm in more of a, I don't want to use the word crossover, but like with the Al Bustan guys and just more of a mode like that these last 2 weeks, I thought I'd maybe play this. Thank you.
Lovely. That's our guest, Jason Vio, playing Oh, What a Wonderful World. And he joins us here in our Philadelphia studio, obviously brought his guitar. We're playing selections from his Grammy-winning CD or his album called Play. And he has a brand new one as well. It's called Together. And he performs with harpist Yolanda Conundant.
Condonassus.
Condonassus.
It's a tough name to pronounce.
Yes, yeah. And we'll be playing a selection from that a little bit later on in the hour. That was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
As you said, that's your arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to just make arrangements of things if a song either pops into my head. I mean, when I'm home, you know, I have a 1-year-old. And we watch Sprout Channel a lot, so I end up making arrangements of all these kind of theme songs that are on these Sprout Channel television shows. So stuff like that. I've always done that, you know, just kind of made up an arrangement by ear. And also now in professional situations, I'm end up doing that a lot with my collaborators, you know, Yolanda Conanassis or Julien Lebrow, the French accordion, the French jazz accordionist, and this week with Al Bustan. Like, we're going to actually get together, you know, tomorrow and basically rehearse this whole concert and kind of, you know, with the newer stuff that we're doing, we're going to see what we come up with. It's very, very exciting, but it's not as sort of planned out as a classical music concert.
I mean, more like jazz in a way,
I guess. It's a lot more, very similar to jazz in terms of the process.
Yeah. Now, were you in rock band? I mean, when you were a kid, a young man with a guitar in high school? I mean,
well,
does it get much cooler than that?
Yeah, well, I sort of blew that opportunity, actually. I was very much, you know, I didn't even really, I was sort of oblivious to that, those possibilities that we now as adults, of course, understand, like, you know. You know, the guitar, the whole guitar thing, you know, rock and roll or singer-songwriter type of thing. But, you know, I was so focused by the time I was 12, 13, 14, I was so into it, you know, so into the practicing. And I did it very much on my own. It was very much my own thing. You know, my parents really sort of
left it up
observed
to you and
it. Yeah, they really just wanted to support it. But it was never – we didn't know anything about it. We were just all kind of – caught up in it. We're learning about it as we went along, learning about the repertoire, learning about the great international players that would come through Rochester, Buffalo, and hold a master class. You know, so we didn't even really know that there was like a potential there until the international players like David Russell or Pepe Romero would Carlos Barbosa Lima, Leona Boyd would tell my parents and my teacher, like, well, yeah, he's
really good.
Yeah, sort of like almost like a basketball prospect, you know, and a scout or a coach or someone saying, like, no, he's, you know, definitely keep him doing what he's doing if, you know. But to me, it was just something I loved doing.
And what, I mean, clearly you're, you know, excellent at what you do, and you clearly love it. I mean, was it kind of love at first sight where you just sort of felt like this instrument that can make this sound is something that really speaks to me?
I think so. I think there must have been some kind of thing like that, but it wasn't a rapturous kind of thing. It was more like I just wanted to get my lesson prepared, you know, for the next week. I was very sort of industrious about it. You know, I would just prepare the next set of things and then just keep moving. Then when you started playing pieces, when you got to the level after a couple of years of studies and exercises and you were playing, you know, bigger pieces, then it's really kind of took hold, especially when you would play for somebody and you get this kind of sort of almost like this early audience interaction kind of thing going. And then it started to become more of a real, you know, thing.
Well, I mean, you're playing, you know, a couple feet away from me. So, I get an up close look at you as you perform. And I always wonder with musicians sort of where when they are performing and performing at such a high level, what are they thinking?
Well,
where is their brain?
You know, it's different. You know, I've played with a lot of great, great musicians around the world, and have lots of friends that are musicians, and I think they think different things. Especially at a high level. I think of jazz playing, jazz improvisation, classical music playing. Classical music performance, you know, everybody has to kind of find their own way to get there, to get to that place where you can really focus and concentrate. And I think for different players, it's different sort of things. For me, it's just if I'm just listening. I feel like I'm a listener along with the audience. If I get into when I'm in that mode where I'm not judging while I'm playing, then and I'm just kind of observing or just listening to the music and enjoying it, that's really nice. That's kind of where I tend to stay.
I mean, that's kind of a nice zen-ish place to be, isn't it? Where you play without judgment.
Yeah, if you can, it's hard not to. But the thing is, the judgment stuff has to. So I do all my worrying and stressing out way before the concert.
Oh, is that right? Like it's days before?
Like weeks and months. Ah. So it's in the preparation of the pieces because, it takes a couple months to prepare, say, a 5-minute piece. To really play it well and to take it through all of its kind of performance process, a new one, something that's new. So it's – and I'm playing a lot of new, different music all the time. So it's that's the time when I'm sort of more like, okay, I've already got it sort of organized in my head as far as how long it's going to take to prepare it.
And are there certain things you do like the day of a concert to sort of get – in the mood, so to speak?
The day of the concert, I often just take a nap.
Oh.
If there's not, unless there's rehearsals all afternoon, but probably this Thursday, I probably will be just rehearsing all afternoon. But so it'll be a little bit of a different situation. Solo recitals, I mean, again, like I said, the day of the concert, it's not really so much. I mean, you've kind of done everything you can do, you know, in terms of preparing, and then it's just. So I just try to get a lot of rest, and I'm 41 now, so. It's actually like the sleep thing is like a way bigger priority than it ever was in your 20s. Yeah, that's a key component when you're older and you've been doing it a long time.
As you mentioned, you grew up listening to the Beatles, soul music, jazz, R&B. What do you listen to now? Or do you still have diverse, eclectic tastes?
It's still pretty diverse. I mean, it's I kind of gravitate toward, 10 – kind of a small group of 10 artists, I suppose, per if we think of it like a genre. There's 10 hip hop artists that I think are just great, and a lot of this, unless something new really like catches my ear but I don't get as exposed to it anymore because I'm just on the road most of the year and doing my own. When you really start doing all your own music on your own projects all the time, it's actually hard to hear new stuff. But I'm into a lot of just the new music compositions that I'm playing or premiering and in terms of classical concert music. Jazz is always going to be like a big, big, thing for me. So,
interesting.
It's always going to be sort of of a vehicle that I'm interested in. I mean, Pat Metheny's, a lot of Pat Metheny's music, Weather Report, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, of course, and just a lot of the guys 50s and 60s, there's a lot of, that's kind of like the main sort of listening thing for me if I had time to listen to music.
Since you're on the road so much. But does teaching help you be a better player?
Yeah, I think so.
Curtis and other places?
I think so. Because you learn, you can't just say, well, this was my solution to your problem. Like sometimes that works. If a student has a problem with like a difficult passage, it's teaching is a lot more than, oh, well, just use this fingering and practice it the way that I did. And then you kind of wash your hands of it. It's a lot of them, it works. But if you sort of take a student where that doesn't work for them, that process, you have to often help them find what their process is going to be to help them to be the most successful. And that's what helps you learn, because then you actually begin to understand that there are other processes to help get to to a solution.
Well, we're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation with our guest, Jason Vio. We're playing selections from his Grammy-winning album called Play, and he is playing for us as well. Teaches at the Curtis Institute of Music here in Philadelphia, co-founded the guitar department at Curtis. A very short break, then we'll get back to our conversation. Open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And yes, that is our guest, Jason Vio. Tuning up, he's going to play another song for us. But in the meantime, let me play another selection from his Grammy-winning album called Play. This is a song called Sunburst. The song was composed by contemporary American classical guitarist Andrew York. to get a snippet from Play, our guest's 2014 album that got a Grammy, a song called Sunburst. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We were just talking about whether this is a good time to be a classical guitarist.
Yeah.
It is.
I think so. I mean, it's – I think we're almost – we could be entering a – or already in, I think, and I've said this in many interviews before, a golden age of guitar performance because, you know, Andre Segovia's, dream years and years ago of making sure and that the guitar was initially in university music schools and in some, in private schools as well. That dream is really just kept going and all the major conservatories in the United States and many around Europe and now Asia is exploding, from the Central Conservatory in Beijing on down Shanghai Conservatory with just amazing players that are being trained from just like piano and violin from like four years old. So we're seeing like sort of an exponential number of core solid players. Whereas I think, more or less you had a lot of good players and then real standout talents, mm-hmm. like great, great talents that I think are every bit is, just super talented as the ones that you see today, like Manuel Barueco or David Russell or a John Williams, But it's just that there's a wider core of really strong players now because of the education. Mm.
Keeping you on your toes, I guess.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just so I'm thankful that I kind of got through to the other side. Like, teaching at Curtis sort of closes that chapter, that circle in a sense of, they were the last holdout. They were the most selective conservatory.
Oh, without a guitar?
They were the most selective, the most traditional in that sense. And 4 years ago,
knocked the door down, right?
Myself and David Starobin, they let the riffraff in finally.
Do you feel like a little like riffraff at Curtis?
No, they don't. Well, no, because they don't, they don't really make you feel that way. And the other musicians, really enjoy working with the guitarists on the standard, chamber repertoire, mm-hmm. which is there and has been there for, a couple hundred years. So.
Well, I'd love to play you. Have you play another tune or song
sure.
for us? This is In a Sentimental Mood, Duke Ellington.
Thanks. I'm just going to tune up a little.
Sure. And a lot of guitar playing is tuning, isn't it?
There's a lot of it. I try to reduce that as much as possible. But, something like, for example, this arrangement of mine is in a different tuning. So the sixth string is normally in E, and I have to tune it down to D for it. So that's like that.
Thank you. Wonderful, in a sentimental mood, by, of course, jazz legend Duke Ellington, and performed by our guest, Jason Vio. Now, is that an arrangement that you did as well?
Yeah, and that was...
I like that a lot.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. That's one that sort of came out of a necessity for a professional engagement with Charlotte Symphony. I mean, I was performing the famous Rodrigo Concierto de Aranjuez, which is a Spanish concerto. By a Spanish composer, but they wanted before that, to start the program, they had a piece by Leonard Bernstein, and then at the end they had something by Gershwin or Ellington, and they said, can you in the second half starts, can you give us like three short solo pieces? We'll just kind of make a solo spotlight, you know, solo guitar, and go from Spain to back to America in three pieces. So remember the guitarist I was mentioning before, Jorge Morel, from Argentina?
Yes.
So the first piece I played like a very short version of Sevilla by Isaac Albéniz. So just, you know, Spanish music.
Right.
And then I did then I played Danza Brasileira by Jorge Morel, which is a very jazz influenced, you know, jazz chords with a samba melody over a samba. And then I crafted this arrangement for that concert, and then I've just been playing it ever since.
Oh,
that was about eight years ago.
Oh, that's great. Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. I see some email comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Cletus from, looks like Ben Salem, to join us on Radio Times. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks so much. Jason, excellent work.
Thank you.
Yeah, perfect. I play, but I'm primarily a vocalist with a guitar and a harmonica around my neck.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
That'd be very hard. It's very hard for me to do, actually, sing and play at the same time.
Kind of like being a drummer.
Right.
Things going on at once. But I did venture into classical with a piece back from the 60s called Classical Gas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Mason Williams.
Right. I can hear it now.
I actually learned how to play that. Yeah, I used to play that out.
Wait, here. Cletus, hold on. It's coming. It's coming.
I don't even know if I remember, but...
That's it.
That was one of the first pieces I learned, actually, when I was about 10 or 11. It was really hard, actually, because the middle section, you had to do this bar on a fifth fret and move the melody around on it. It was, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of an early one for me, but tough piece.
Yeah. Cletus, go ahead.
That sounded terrific. The other question that is more of a technical, you mentioned Segovia, and Marty already took some of my other questions, but
sorry,
now that you mentioned Andre Segovia, do you eschew, to use a $10 word, amplification, as unlike Sokovia, who, if I remember correctly, did not like to be mic'd or amplified.
With solo recitals, anything up to about 700 people, I want to say around there, 700-800 people, I don't use amplification. The guitar, it's hard to hear to tell through radio because it kind of compresses things a bit.
Yes.
But the guitar is actually a very resonant and powerful instrument, and just over the years I've learned how to project, you know, it through, you know, in a space that, you know, anything. Like I said, under 700-800 people, the guitar actually projects just fine. But with orchestra in particular, if you're playing like the Rodrigo Concierto de Aranjuez, you know, I have no problem using amplification because I want to be heard. I don't want the audience complaining to the orchestra folks about, well, we couldn't hear him. You know, that's the
musician's lament, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so. I feel like it's with the technology too that we have with amplification. It's really, you can get, there's some really very good amplifiers out there that sound very natural.
I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Carl from Devon has to say. Carl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Great program.
Thank
really
you.
Really enjoying the music.
Great.
Many years ago, I heard Segovia at Carnegie Hall. And one of the things that I noticed was that in his playing, there was a lot of swoop, which is, I guess, the sound you get when your fingers slide across the strings. I don't hear that very much in contemporary playing.
Yes. Well, it's been,
interesting,
you know,
comment.
That's a very good comment, and I've gotten that comment a lot about my playing and other players of today that we don't hear it quite as much. It's actually something that we work on. I think at some point it became, again, in the evolution of the development of playing and education and teaching, it began to be something I think that where good teachers really try to discourage it and think of it as almost as extraneous sound to the music. And I know that for myself, for me, I worked on it because my parents noticed it. You know, my parents
that kind of almost like a little bit
squeaking.
Of a screechy sound.
Yeah, it's this kind of like,
yeah, I know. Yes.
Thing. So when they say, why is that squeaking sound there in the strings? That's not part of the, they would literally say like stuff like, that's not part of the music.
fixed that problem.
So I tried to fix it. I tried to, I was like, okay, put that on the list of things to do. So, you know.
Well, I do want to, we're going to play things, close things out with your brand new CD. This is Together, and you are playing with harpist Yolanda Condonasis.
That's it, yeah.
Condonasis. And it's interesting to hear a harp and a guitar together.
Yes. Well, this is a new project, you know, for us. And what's really cool about it is that there's really not a lot yet. Hopefully there'll be more through this project. But not a lot of existing repertoire for the two instruments. And we're finding in our concerts and through the radio play of this that people are really sort of people are really excited about the combination of the two instruments, because depending on the piece you listen to in the CD, sometimes it's a bit of a dialogue where you can tell the differences, which is a good thing. And then some of the music, the blend is is such that it's almost hard to tell where one instrument begins and the other one ends. And so it's a really interesting combination.
Well, and we're almost have to end things out, but it's also two instruments where you use a lot of thumbs.
That's right.
A lot of thumb work there.
It's the two classical instruments where you entirely create the sound with your fingers. It's like the sound is with our fingertips.
Well, Jason Vio, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, for bringing your guitar, for playing your beautiful music.
Thanks.
Thanks
I had a great
much.
Time, Marty. Thank you.
We had a great time as well. And again, our guest, Jason Vio, and he did get a Grammy this year for his album Play. And we do want to close things out. And this is a valse, the second movement of the Suite Magica by Argentine classical guitarist composer Máximo Diego Puyol.